Welcome to Season 3 of E-Commerce Fastlane, Episode 94.
Welcome to E-Commerce Fastlane, the podcast show to help you build, launch, grow, and scale a wildly successful e-commerce company. Listen to real conversations with proven practical strategies and success stories. Learn how to generate more traffic, more sales, more profit, and customer lifetime value for your Shopify store. And now, your host and e-commerce entrepreneur, Steve Hutt.
This episode is brought to you by ShipBob, the best-in-class order fulfillment company for small to mid-sized Shopify brands. ShipBob powers two-day and three-day shipping and fulfillment for thousands of direct-to-consumer brands. They've also been fully operational during the coronavirus across their 9 fulfillment centers in the U.S., Canada, and Europe. ShipBob is also a tech-enabled 3PL that fulfills e-commerce orders for direct-to-consumer retailers. Their mission is clear: to make your Shopify brand successful by providing best-in-class logistics so your customers don't go elsewhere. With reliable fulfillment services, warehouses near your customers, and connected technology that powers the fulfillment network, they will help improve transit times, shipping costs, and the delivery experience for your customers. So check them out today at shipbob.com. Hey there, it's Steve, and welcome back to the E-Commerce Fastlane podcast. Now, if this is your first time listening, this is an e-commerce show where we have honest and transparent conversations about building and thriving with your store powered by Shopify or Shopify Plus. Now, new episodes are available each week with your favorite podcast player through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or you can also sign up online at ecommercefastlane.com and be notified when a new show is being released. Now, my guest on today's episode is Brandon Brown, who is the co-founder and CEO from Grin. They have developed a software tool built to enable direct-to-consumer brands to scale influencer marketing. As more and more people spend time on their phones instead of socializing in real life, and you know, research really shows now that the average screen time is up to over 5 hours and 40 minutes a day, which is an 18% increase pre-COVID. So it's predicted that this trend will only continue to increase, or at the very least, it's going to stay the same. It's such an interesting time. It's a really important topic. I think today you're going to learn a lot about how your in-house team can execute authentic influencer marketing strategies at scale. And I think that's the reason why I have Brandon on today. That's why I want to teach you all about what's going on with the Grin platform, and a lot of the Shopify brands, and why they've made the choice to migrate to this platform. So hi, Brandon. Welcome to E-Commerce Fastlane.
Hey, Steve. Yeah, thank you very much for having me. Eager to dig in and excited to speak with you and hopefully share some valuable insights with the audience.
So let's talk on a high level first, because I think there might be some misconceptions about influencer marketing and then SaaS tools that help people make the decision to locate and manage influencer campaigns. And so let's talk about what Grin does and the problem that it's solving for Shopify store owners.
Sure. So the core problem that influencer marketing solves from our view is really around brand trust and building authentic connection with the consumer. Yes, with influencer marketing, you drive traffic, you drive conversions, there is direct ROI associated with it. But at the end of the day, what you really do is you create a more meaningful connection with the consumer versus traditional marketing. And this is because the messenger that is delivering the branded content and the endorsement is trusted by the audience, right? And so influencer marketing is a core part of every high growth direct-to-consumer brand strategy now. I think you'd be very hard pressed to find any breakout challenger brand and or legacy direct-to-consumer brand that doesn't have influencer marketing as a core piece of their mix. And when you're getting started with influencer marketing, oftentimes you're starting in spreadsheets, you're recruiting manually, you're running these programs and building and learning and testing. But then as soon as you get to see some results, you want to figure out how to scale. So Grin is a software tool. We're built specifically for e-commerce brands who do influencer marketing. We call it a CRM for influencer marketing because it's really about relationship management and authentic content production at scale. Our software, in short, helps brands identify influencers, recruit them, activate them, and then report on all of their influencer marketing activity.
Awesome. And I do see on your homepage, you have many, many case studies, but you're talking some pretty significant brands, Movement Watches, which was acquired by Movado last year. And there's just, it's unbelievable the amount of brands that have kind of made the decision to want to use your platform to help manage that. So let's dig into your story, because I think it's always fascinating to me about why people build what they build. And you're the CEO, you're the co-founder. And so let's unpack that a little bit. Like, what would you say uniquely positions you, you know, and your co-founder, I guess, number one, to have the desire, and number two, to have the expertise to want to create this platform?
That's a great question. So yeah, a little bit about me. So my background, I'm a marketer. I've been in marketing my whole life, love marketing, cut my teeth with a bunch of different disciplines in marketing. My background is really in action sports and consumer marketing at Red Bull. So I was at Red Bull North America down in Santa Monica in Southern California. And my time there, you know, I was in a handful of different disciplines in marketing. But one of the core things that I did was build one of the largest opinion leader programs in the world for Red Bull in LA. So this was well before Instagram was a huge thing. You know, social was still growing. But through that process, what I really grew to understand is, how do you drive outcome through people? Red Bull called them opinion leaders. These are like musicians, DJs, athletes, people like this. And in that world, action sports, youth culture, music, the most important thing is just is genuine, being genuine, and at the end of the day, doing real things, right? And you know, people who are fake or doing something without care for the core culture that they're supporting, they're going to be identified and then forced out by the consumer. So our thesis when moving into influencer marketing was, most of the solutions to influencer marketing took a really transactional approach. So they said, hey, look, we're gonna play middleman, we're gonna get a bunch of influencers, and we're gonna middleman all of these deals. Our view was that if influencer marketing is fundamentally about building trust with the consumer, then you need to take a relationship-based approach, because having a direct relationship with the brand and the influencer builds an authentic connection, real affinity for the product, and that in turn enables honest endorsement to the consumer. And so I knew that because I didn't grow up in this social media world. I grew up in real brand building, where people who didn't honestly believe in your product, if they were endorsing it, like, you would get called out. And that was a part of what I'd been taught at Red Bull. And so we took a very different approach to influencer marketing. And we were one of the first people that came out as pure software. So we don't middleman the deals. We launched a relationship management system instead of a marketplace or a network. And, you know, it's been really well received. And it's based on really my decade plus experience working at Red Bull and understanding how to drive real outcome through people. And that's not treating them like a transaction. That's actually building a real relationship with them, so they can honestly talk about what you're doing.
Yeah, I love that, because I do see quite a few. My wife makes these comments too. She shows me her phone at night when she goes through her feed, and she almost like whips through a lot of the ads, even though she's following some really important people that, you know, she likes to see their lifestyle and kind of what they're up to. But she feels that she will start unfollowing people if she feels that they're pushing product that really is not in alignment, kind of what they're all about. And really, it obviously was dollars and cents is the reason why they did it. More celebrity endorsements than, you know, it truly is a business relationship than, as you're saying, building authentic relationships with people. From what I see in the front lines dealing with a lot of Shopify Plus brands, is that they seem to get a lot more value out of people, number one, that likely are already your customer. That's a good starting point, and that have a decent social following, because they already like what you're all about. You don't have to sell them on the concept. And I think that's what you were talking about, these marketplaces potentially of people that are that have some influence by large audiences, but they're not really picky about particular product that they want to endorse, versus the other way around, as you're saying, create authentic relationships and then having them promote as a micro influencer, like 10,000, 20,000 followers. They seem to have a lot more engagement and a lot more conversion rate and more trust and authority. Is that kind of what you're seeing on your end?
So you're touching on a few things there, right? The first kind of big concept is that you just articulated to me is that, according to your wife, like, influencer marketing feels fake. There's this elephant in the room that has emerged with what we call influencer marketing 1.0. So that was the first wave of all these tools. What they did by middlemaning these transactions, what they're doing is they're incentivizing the brand to find any influencer who will take the job, right? Mm-hmm. So then what ends up happening is that influencers, in a trying to make money and not knowing any better, they end up promoting things they don't use. They have no belief in the brand. And the consumer's like, BS radar, like, you don't actually care about this. And
right.
And so there it's like you actually sacrifice the core thing you're trying to do, which is build deeper connection with the consumer and more brand trust, right? Mm. So you're exactly right. our recommendation is take a relationship-based approach, find people who have real affinity for your brand and product. And if they don't actually have affinity, figure out how to inspire affinity through building a real connection, figuring out what that person's interests are, supporting them in their endeavors, introducing your product in an honest way, and making them a believer in your product and brand. And then what is going to happen is they're going to create incredible content that the consumer knows is authentic and real. A great place to start with that is with smaller influencers, people who are already your customers. We have a feature in Grin where when someone buys from you, we'll go match all their social and we'll say, oh, hey, Steve just bought your product. He has 10,000 followers on Instagram. Recruit him into your program. You're hitting the nail on the head. And I think there's really kind of a lot of re-education that needs to happen in the influencer marketing space around, hey, what is this at its core? Yes, it's about traffic and conversions, but this is not ad buying. This is not programmatic. This is not a pure distribution thing. If you look at it that way, like the consequences can be disastrous for your brand if you're not careful.
So let's talk about like the, I guess, the value of influencer marketing. I think people would agree listening today that they believe it's important. You're making some really clear distinctions. And I agree with this, that the fakeness that can go along with just trying to make money as an influencer for a brand you don't care about. So I think the transparency, a cause-based, and really having a high-quality product and having people being raving fans around it, I think is the ultimate goal of most brands today. You obviously have a lot of frontline experience now with the brands that you deal with. Like, how should people think about influencer marketing? And are there certain kind of KPIs and things that are important?
So I would start first kind of broadly with how to think about it. So, you know, obviously at the end of the day, you should care about revenue and conversion for sure. Like marketing is a way to create demand for your product, build brand, but really at the end of the day, you're trying to sell product. And the stronger brand you have, the more product you sell. So people who say that influencer marketing is not a revenue channel are misinformed, but that doesn't tell the whole story, right? So I think about if I was running a direct-to-consumer, you know, I'm running obviously a software company, but a product company, a D2C product company. Brands are always looking for ways to either drive CAC down or LTV up, right? These are like the two levers that you're optimizing against. And smart brands understand that creating emotional connection with the consumer drives LTV up. Because what you end up doing is by building a stronger brand, you create diehard fans who come back and purchase from you again and again and again and again, right? And you drive LTV up. So it's not always about near-term CAC reduction. Influencer marketing, when you have a really strong influencer program firing, what we do find is that social engagement goes up, paid CAC goes down. It does drive CAC down across the mix, but more importantly, you're creating a deeper connection with the consumer. And as a result, you should be driving LTV up through traffic that's coming through this channel. So that's really what influencer marketing does. And then I think tactically, right, there's a bunch of KPIs. So first core one, I would say, is direct revenue. The thing about revenue, and we should talk a little bit about attribution and how to track revenue, but you should understand that only 40% roughly of your revenue is going to be directly attributable through either discount code or a link. And so there's a lot of what people have different names for it, dark social. I've heard it called different things. The conversions that come in that can't be tracked, a lot of that is from influencer. Just think about how the consumer browses social. They're going through Instagram stories, they're on YouTube. They're not always clicking a link or using a code. Oftentimes they're just going off pure recall and then entering in the URL and going and buying. Direct revenue is super important, but it can't be tracked at 100%. And that's a really hard problem. No one's fully solved it yet. We're probably one of the best in the game at influencer. And then content production. So that would be the next big thing. Obviously you need a ton of content to power your mix, not just on social, on kind of earned social, right? But you need owned social. You need all of your paid content, PR, web, all of that stuff. So I think content production is a huge value in KPI. And then there's a bunch of other things like around, you know, engagement rate and general social metrics and KPIs that are important. But that's kind of broadly speaking how I think about the value and how I think people should think about it.
Yeah, you hit on a sore spot for me about attribution, because I think when you talk about like dark social, people aren't coming into the funnel at the top anymore. And we're a multi-channel world right now, as you like you said, and people can come in, and I think brands need to be patient, knowing that they're not going to buy the first time they hit the website. But I think attributing the sale, unfortunately, Facebook last click attribution, but it's how do we, and this is the conversations I have all day long. I'm part of the merchant success team. I have a book of business that I manage all day long. And these are the conversations they really want to nail down is it a CDP, this customer data platform? What are these analytics tools that are available? And you're suggesting that really only about 40% of influencer revenue is somewhat attributed, and the other 60% is kind of floating around. I guess there's one way around that, that I, you know, and I'll throw this back to you in a second. that I see, because I think people would like to know about their attribution and kind of, and where did you hear about us? And there's quite a few post-purchase tools that are available through Shopify and through some of the partners that really ask one or two questions, like, how did you hear about us after a sale happened? Because Facebook likely, or Instagram or wherever, or Pinterest is going to say that they had the last click and that's why you bought. But the reality is, like you said, you might be on YouTube or you might be on Instagram and you didn't click through, but you saw the ad so many times, or an email or some kind of a push notification. Who really knows? But eventually you decided to go there directly. You made a purchase, but then what in your mind do you actually believe was the reasons why you're here today? Did a friend tell you about it? Yeah, maybe. So I just want to hear what your thoughts are about that, since a lot of the attribution is missing. 40% is being attributed, 60 is just kind of floating around. Am I on the right track here about getting people having some kind of a post-purchase survey to kind of validate how their spend is from these different channels?
I love that. What's the tool?
It's called Enquire. Really neat tool. I think I did a podcast episode maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, so you can just go back to the archives through e-commerce Fastlane. Nice little post-purchase follow-up just to make sure that you feel that I spent money, this much money on Facebook, but then they say, no, I heard it on a podcast. Or my friend told me about it. I'm like, oh, okay, well, what podcast? That's the second question, right?
So yeah, it's great insight. I'll have to check that tool out. Yeah, I think you're right. So I have, you know, friends who have consumer brands that are customers and also advisors in the product. And I've heard this described as like hurricane social. You're one of my really successful company. And he's basically like, yeah, it's like you're creating this hurricane on social. And even though I can't track all of the revenue, I know like the broad correlation is there, because when I throttle my influencer program down and up, like I see very clear trends in the revenue performance, right? Yeah. And so he knows that the correlation is there. And I think that idea of like baseline conversions versus sales lift conversions, right? I think it was popularized in the App Store around, I don't know if they still do this. I used to be in mobile apps back in the day. And there's this concept of boosting an app in the charts. And so they would do like these install campaigns where you get thousands and thousands of installs in a really short period of time. You boost the app up to the top 10 on the App Store charts, but then they're not actually looking at the cost per install on the attributed cost per install. They're looking at the attributed cost per install plus, they call it, organic uplift that they got from going to number one in the App Store. So they're like, okay, we paid, you know, $5 for 20,000 installs, but we know that of those 20,000, we got an incremental 30,000 by being like top three for those 3 days in the App Store. So I think that's like a pretty interesting way to think about it. And I've heard about e-commerce brands doing the same thing in some of our customers, where they're looking at like what's a normal day on conversions for us and revenue. And they say, okay, now let's go really hard with like our top 20 kind of mega influencers and then do a whole activation with a bunch of middle and micro influencers around them over the course of these 7 days. And they're looking at that 40% conversion, but then they're also saying like, what did we go up against the base? And they're making some determinations around what the true CAC is from that cost and effort, which I think is a pretty sophisticated way to think about it.
Well, thanks for sharing that. So let's dig into about how people can actually get started with influencer marketing, because I think there's a lot of different trains of thought, different tools, different best practices, lots of things to read on the internet. We'll dig into one of the ebooks that you've just produced recently, the 0 to 100 in a few minutes. But let's kind of dig into how you believe today we're in the midst of a global pandemic right now. People are at home. We've talked about how much people are using their phones more. People are shopping more online. I think the latest stats we heard is that 2030 happened in 2020. 10 years worth of e-commerce growth happened in 8 weeks. So we're just curious on your side, how do you believe people can get started with influencer marketing?
Great question. And so that's interesting stat. I had a conversation with someone earlier, an investor type who said, and don't quote me on this, and if people go fact check this, I don't know. I haven't looked it up, but something like e-commerce was 15%, and now it's like 20-30% of like the total pie.
30.
Yeah. And that was over the course of 2 months. Is that right?
Yes.
Do you know?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's crazy. And so you're talking 2 months doubled, 15-30%, and like, is it ever going back down? Like who knows, you know? I mean, that's arguable. I think this is a trend that was already continuing. And so the fact that 2030 happened in 2020 makes a lot of sense to me.
I was just going to say too, that I was on a pre-show yesterday, depending on when I'm releasing this episode, but yesterday was Reunite, which was the partner conference for Shopify. And I was on a pre-show, and one of the comments that he made about his brand And he's selling a cosmetic brand for women kind of 45 to 50 plus. And so his comment was, hey, you know what? Even though the penetration of e-commerce sales right now is about 30% of total GMV of total spend. So it's a huge jump in the last 8 weeks. But for him, he's finding the demographic of the 45 plus demographic, which didn't necessarily grow up with the internet, didn't do as much shopping online as maybe like, you know, the millennials and younger generation because they grew up with the internet. And so where someone who's 50 plus didn't grow up with the internet at all, but now they were forced over the last 8 weeks to have to shop online. And then they have lots of time at home to discover new brands. And then, you know, that could be through influencer campaigns. Who knows? They find these other brands, they're shopping at these brands, and they're actually liking the experience of shopping online. So it's that demographic for sure is likely not going to stop doing what they're doing. If they like to buy their wine online a case at a time every month, then let them do that because it's easy. They don't have to lug it around or whatever it is they want to buy. And return policies are so flexible now with free labels and free returns and pickup. And you know, something you can buy goods now and don't have to pay for it. Order whatever you want, and then they have your return label, and then whatever you keep, then they bill you for it. It's these sorts of things are happening. I think this 45 plus is not going to stop. So that's why I think my guess is that it's probably going to hover around 22, 23% instead of 30. It's going to go down a bit as stores start to open. But, you know, once again, my wife was at a store recently, went to a mall, and there's arrows going in this door and out that door and plexiglass around all these things. It's a really strange world we're living in right now. So I think people are just not wanting to do that as much as they used to for a lot of safety reasons. And so they're resorting them to go online. So.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. And it's pretty exciting to be a part of, you know, I think obviously super challenging for lots of people. But I think, you know, with challenge comes opportunity, and people who are able to understand and adapt to this new world quickly and go to where the attention is and be a relevant part of the conversation, like the rewards are going to be proven for them.
So let's dig into your idea about how people can get rocking here with influencer marketing today.
Yeah. So my honest suggestion would be to start manually. I don't think that in the early days, it makes sense to even invest into a tool. I think, you know, what you should really be doing when you're starting influencer marketing is, you know, putting someone on it and figuring out how to identify good fit influencers. There's a bunch of search engines and search tools if you want, but I honestly probably wouldn't even start there. I would go look at my customer base, like you had alluded to earlier, and say, okay, who's already buying from me that really loves my product? You know, what influencers from a content and audience perspective do I think are within my customer target group? Who are people who look like they're just a natural part of my brand conversation online? And then I would approach them. I would DM them on Instagram or get their email, shoot them an email, and just reach out with a super informal request to collaborate and connect, right? And I wouldn't ask for anything up front. I would just introduce myself. I'd say, hey, you know, I'm Brandon. I'm with Grin. You know, we've been following your content online. We love it. We love what you're doing. You know, we'd love to figure out how to make some content with you. If this is interesting, like, let me know. And then they get back to you, and I would strike up a conversation with them. And then I would start with, you had mentioned earlier as well, I would start with smaller influencers that, you know, have, you know, manageable amounts of followers. And I would start with just product only. So, you know, depending how valuable your product is, I would start seeding products slowly to a wide volume of influencers, and I would ask them to post on my behalf. And I would do that to learn. I would do that to learn about how does the process work? What are typical responses? What types of audiences and content resonate, right, with the consumer, and where am I really getting good engagement? And then as you started to see where the engagement is working, I would start to work more directly with those influencers in longer term arrangements. And then I would slowly start to probably introduce some sort of tracking, either affiliate links and swipe up, discount codes to track the revenue. They could be positioned as like gifts instead of discount codes if you're worried about kind of brand perception and all that. And I would start manually. And then, you know, as you start to get your feet under you and start to figure out what the message is online, who responds, then I would start thinking about, you know, how you can scale.
And then we should probably dig into your ebook that was released recently and the whole webinar series that's happening.
Yeah. So if you are interested in starting with influencer marketing, we partnered with Ethan Frame. He's the director of influencer marketing at Movement Watches, who, you know, for me as a consumer is one of my favorite brands. And he partnered with us to put together a step-by-step guide that we're calling 0 to 100. So the idea is, how do you get from 0 to your first 100 influencers? And he goes through a multi-part series. We had the first webinar yesterday. There's six more webinars coming up, but it's all about getting started. How do you identify influencers? How do you budget for your influencer program? How do you outreach to people in a way that's relevant and gets responses? How do you manage your activations? And then, you know, finally, how do you analyze performance and know where to invest? So Ethan's super talented, great guy. Obviously, Movement's an incredible brand. And so it's been really awesome to partner with him on that content. And I think it will deliver a lot of value to people who are trying to learn about influencer marketing.
Awesome. I'll make sure in the show notes, I'll have links to each, depending on when this is being released or when you're listening today, but you'll be able to see the links to the webinar and to the ebook, the 0 to 100. So let's dig into how the Grin platform could be a great piece of tech for those that maybe have started to outgrow the manual method that you're referring to of just looking at your own customers and doing some manual work that way and just kind of one-on-one authentic outreach and starting to see how the workflow could be. How does Grin now fit in when it's time to start scaling that effort?
A couple things. Grin, first of all, is pure software. So we don't actually do the work. We're not an agency or a service provider. We have a bunch of agencies who use our product, but that's not what we do. So we're a workflow software tool. So it's all about scaling and efficiency. And so what our software does is it helps full life cycle. So it helps from recruitment to management to activation to all of the content aggregation and reporting. So specifically, if you think about it, so and we also, which is, I'm really happy I'm on the e-commerce Fastlane podcast because from my perspective now, maybe I'm a little biased because I'm the CEO, but I think we're the unequivocal e-commerce leader. So we integrate into all the big e-commerce platforms, Shopify being core kind of first integration that we built. But if you think about that integration, it enables us to automate a really large portion of the process. And I can give you just two examples. You know, there's dozens of these examples, but two examples. When you think about just shipping product and then also discount code creation and management, which is how a lot of the brands track ROI, because it's honestly one of the more effective ways. So before Grin, if you think about it, you've got an influencer marketing manager. They want to do, let's say, like a Black Friday campaign. They go through and they have a Google sheet. They have all of the influencers, Instagrams and social links, YouTube, whatever it is, an email. And then they have columns for discount code and then also what types of products that they like. They go through, they fill out that sheet, they email everybody, they get all these responses, they put in what products they want, and then they figure out what the discount code is going to be. And so across those two things, what they have to do then is if they want to ship the product, they need to go into their fulfillment system, Shopify or something else, input that person's information if they're not already a customer, ship them the product, track it. And they also have to create the discount code inside of the e-commerce tool. And they have to, if you're working with, let's say, 500 or 1,000 influencers, which is very common for the bigger brands on big activations, like that takes hours and hours and hours. Mm-hmm. So with Grin, we're fully integrated two-way sync with the e-commerce platforms. So you can basically filter down, select all the influencers in your relationship management section, push them into an activation, ship all of the product to them and create all the discount codes in, you know, 2 or 3 minutes and just save hours. So when you're really talking about kind of enterprise grade and not from a brand size, but just from a sophistication, influencer marketing, people who really know what they're doing, our tool just automates huge parts of that process. And those are two descriptions around where it adds value.
Beautiful. Love it. So it's important, obviously, we all agree now that it's important to have an influencer program. You're either going to do it manually, like I said, with spreadsheets and kind of do that manually one at a time, authentic. And, you know, if you're an early stage kind of entrepreneur, then that makes sense. At least go out and do that with your existing customers. If you further along your maturity, a Grin may fit into your workflow by actually having a process in place and a tool, a SaaS tool that actually helps you manage this, you know, thousands of influencers as you scale. So let's talk a little bit about maybe some advice that you see people that are using your tool or not, but just was curious about how do you build a successful influencer program?
So, you know, first thing that is obvious to some, but not to others, but what I would say is authenticity is everything. So influencer marketing fundamentally is about building brand trust. It's about creating a brand that has depth and has a meaningful connection with the consumer. And so obviously you want to scale and you need to scale, and there's a big revenue component to it as well. But the key thing here is you need to optimize towards honest endorsement. So people with affinity that really believe in your product and aren't just doing it just for the money. Yes, you can pay them, but if they're doing it just for the money, the consumer is going to smell it. So you need to optimize towards authentic and trustworthy content. And what happens when you have a big influencer program that's driving a lot of organic distribution, right? Where it's just in the news feeds and it's in the Instagram feeds and you're getting a lot of drafting off of that. That content that resonates, right? The content that ends up getting a lot of engagement and people are commenting and liking, like, oh, this is great. And the audiences are really following and engaging with that content then should be repurposed and used across the other channels. And so, of course, it's not news to anybody. Maybe it is to some people, but influencer content performs incredibly well when you put paid budgets behind it. And even more so when you can take the same audience that follows that influencer and build lookalikes around it and use the influencer content in the ad creative. But it's not just, right, ad creative. It's posting on your own social. It's driving up conversion on landing pages. It's definitely building custom audiences for retargeting. So when you focus on, you know, scaling honest endorsement and trusted content, then you get this wealth of content. First of all, that drives revenue for you, but you also get this wealth of content that you can use throughout the mix. And so, you know, beyond that, if you haven't looked at like whitelisting influencer accounts to run paid through their accounts, you should definitely look at that, which is interesting, especially if you're fighting ad fatigue from the brand account. You know, you can take over an influencer account and run ads. And there's a great tool that is called Lumanu that if you haven't checked out, that does that, run by a great team. And then, you know, last thing I would say is think long-term. You know, this is not like AdWords or Facebook ads influencer as a channel. Yes, it can feed into those things, but it's not like that. It's not transactional and it's not fully programmatic. So you really need to think long-term, finding people that believe in what you're doing, create long-term partnerships with them and create these steady streams of organic content. And that's how I would think about it. And that's what we see, you know, across all of the high growth brands. That's what they're doing. And they integrate this into their mix in this kind of long-term fashion where they control it and they don't let someone middleman it.
I might add too, I know reviews and like user generated content, you talk about like rights management and being able to push ads around user generated content. And there's quite a few tools out there, either through like Okendo or Lux, L-O-O-X or Pixly. There's quite a few tools that connect that are truly a platform that are designed to help get this user generated content from people that have actually purchased. And then from there, they get their 15 minutes of fame by potentially being on the product details page or on some kind of social ads. And there's some rights management that's like tools that allow access to this user-generated content for the brand to use for ads legally. So there's lots of things out there so just something to think about too. So there is the do-it-yourself kind of like spreadsheet method. If you've matured up, then Grin is your next opportunity for that workflow. There's also some things that can happen on your product details pages that I think can really help lift conversion rate by having these people that are your customers. And then you can see the videos and the pictures that they actually take. That will really motivate you even more and wanting to work with them if they're willing to do it already just because they love the product so much. They didn't even want any money out of the deal. They just, you know, you send them a link and saying, hey, you know, maybe there's a $10 gift card or something if you can give us a review. You know, incentivized a bit, but great. You get to see what kind of quality they do. And then that gets to go somewhere on your product page, which overall helps the trust of being able to purchase from that company, right?
So one comment on that, Steve, I think you're so right. And this is why like I shy away, and this is maybe controversial, maybe not, but I shy away from calling influencer marketing a channel. Okay. Yes, it's a channel, right? It is a channel, but it's also a strategy that improves all your other channels. And so by putting trusted influencer content and or customer content on your product pages to drive up conversion through trust, that's a big example of that. So I think that's a great example. And that's how I think the good high growth brands are thinking about it. They're thinking about, yes, this is a traffic and revenue channel, but this is also something that pipes into all our other pieces of the mix to help us just create a stronger, you know, acquisition engine.
So I'm sure you can appreciate this show has, I'd say a diverse range of listeners. And I think you have a kind of unique perspective into commerce, kind of entrepreneurship with just both your past and then currently now with this tool and the brands that you work with. Are you able to offer any advice today? Maybe those brands that are in the early stage of their business. So they're on Shopify and they're getting some quote unquote product market fit. So they are selling. What sort of things would you recommend these early stage people listening today?
Yep. So it would kind of go back to my advice around starting an influencer program. So first of all, I would say, you know, triple down on influencer marketing for sure. It's a core part of your mix. It needs to be a core part of your mix, and you need to get started and figure it out. I would stay, you know, far, far away from any solution that aggregates influencers into this marketplace or network model. I think those models incentivize influencers to promote things they don't use with no real belief in the brand. And I think it's typically seen as, you know, excuse my French, but like BS by the consumer. And I think long-term, you know, you really run the risk of doing more harm than good with those approaches. Instead, what I would do is I would just start internally on my own. I would identify people who have brand fit, and I would organically connect with them and say, I want to partner with them on some content. I'd use my email to reach out to them, tell them I love their content. Hey, I want to send you some product. No real expectation. If you want to post, that would be great. I'd send them product they're going to post. And then I would slowly start to introduce performance tracking mechanics as I grew that program over time. And I would track the content. And then I would make sure that I had the rights either via email and or some sort of tool, right, to be able to use the high performing content across my mix. And you can do all of this, I would say, with, you know, one or two people internally, and you can really learn a lot about what resonates, how influencer marketing works, which types of creators drive a lot of revenue, which ones create the most engaging content. But I would start manually, and I would own my relationships in-house versus outsource those to like a third party or a middleman.
Yeah. So the marketplace model is out. Okay.
That's my view. I'm biased. I don't know. I just think like, I don't know. I'm not sure how influencer marketing ended up in this place where a bunch of people who don't believe in the product are promoting it. I just think that's a bad look.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. So what about those listening today that would be considered in the mid-market or even enterprise? They're likely on Shopify Plus. They would have a team that's eager to grow and scale. And like from your vantage point, what should those marketers work on today?
Well, this is funny, but I would say call Grin. And I think, right? I think it will. Yeah. The truth is this, if you're an e-commerce focused brand, we have an incredible product that is built to help you scale. So we're the only influencer solution that's hyper-focused on D2C, and we solve your core workflow problems better than anyone else in the game. And so I would do a thorough evaluation. I would look at all of the tools that make sense. I would figure out, hey, who's built for me? And I would figure out how to sign up with a great solution where I could bring my influencers. They didn't go into this kind of pool that my competitors could then poach them. And I would start to leverage some sort of tool to scale and get better analytics and insights into what's performing. That's how I would approach it. And I think, you know, you pretty quickly running things manually on your own becomes unmanageable. And so for those mid-market brands, I definitely think you should evaluate all the solutions, and you can shoot me an email and I'll set you up with someone. But I would love for you to take a look at our tool because I think it would be a great fit for you.
So what about the future for Grin? I'm always curious about roadmaps. Are you able to share any highlights for 2020, any kind of partner alignment or any new innovation? Just end of the day, like how is, I guess, the current and the future Grin product, how is it going to help Shopify brands?
Yeah, so I think core to our long-term mission is all around growth and authenticity. You know, I've hit on it a bunch in through this discussion, but I think authentic media production is the core value of influencer marketing. And brands that are seen as authentic by the consumer have significant advantage over those that aren't, because they have such a stronger connection with the consumer, and those people come back and they spread the word and they buy from them again and again. And we all know whoever has the highest LTV can pay the most for CAC and usually ends up winning in the marketplace. So we will always be focused on authenticity and real trusted content and relationships. Our view is that over time, you know, influencer marketing to some people is kind of like a dirty word. It has a little bit of a bad rap. You know, from my perspective, people are like influencer marketing and they have this view of a certain thing happening on Instagram where people are promoting, you know, maybe and they don't like it. But if you think about it, like what are influencers? Influencers are really everything. Like you can call them whatever you want. But our view is that there's this whole set of non-programmatic marketing. So marketing that shouldn't be automated. And it's not about reach and frequency. It's about engaging content and trust. And so those are things like PR and athlete marketing and tastemaker endorsement and customer advocacy and employee advocacy, affiliate marketing to some extent. But there's this whole group of disciplines within marketing where you actually need to have a relationship with someone in order to drive the outcome. It's not like push button and get the reach. It has to go through a person. So our product over time, I would expect it to expand to start to handle more of these like influencer use cases that aren't really seen as influencer today. But I think over time, influencer will kind of subsume all of these disciplines and will be seen as the macro thing where this is how you actually activate all of these people.
Beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. So we are nearing the end of the show for today, but do you have any closing comments or any takeaways that you would like to share with our listeners today?
Well, you know, first, thanks for having me on. It's been great to chat with you. You know, I'm a big fan of entrepreneurship and people that are going out and risking a lot to build businesses. And if there's any way that I can help you in that endeavor as a founder, as a marketer, you know, I'm easy to get a hold of and happy to help. So thanks for giving me a platform to talk to your audience. You know, I would say at Grin, we've really built a fundamentally different product than most of the people who are in our space. And this is because of our relationship-based ethos and belief that authenticity is everything. And it's been really well received. So, you know, if you believe that influencer marketing is fundamentally relational and it's not transactional, then, you know, I'd love to talk with you. You know, our product's hyper-focused on e-commerce, hyper-focused on D2C. We have tons of ways that we solve those problems via integrations and product. And, you know, there's a lot going on for that e-commerce use case.
So how can people learn more about the Grin platform?
So first and foremost, I would just go to our website, www.grin.co. So grin.co. Everything is on our website, you know, a bunch around kind of product and all of that. And then if you there's a way to reach out to our team if you want to get in touch and talk about potentially collaborating or partnering or signing up for our product. But it's all on grin.co.
Perfect. And I've noticed there's quite a few resources there, some guides and toolkits, a lot of success stories and industry trends. There's even a webinar series that's active right now, podcast series that's active right now. There's lots of great content. So those that are looking to expand their knowledge, life of learning mantra, this is a really good place to bookmark and sign up to their newsletter. We did speak offline just before recording today. And can you share with our listeners something a little extra that you're considering to offer today?
What we're going to do is we're going to put together basically a fast track demo. So if you're listening to the podcast, you're not just starting out, you know, you already work with a handful of influencers and you're interested in scaling. Let's put a link in the description. Okay. And what we'll do is I'll send you to a specific page that'll kind of get past the first level of Grin, and we'll get you on with someone pretty quickly to show you the product. And then beyond that, the 0 to 100 book, if you're just getting started and you want some insider information for how Movement Watches, really how Ethan Frame at Movement Watches helped to build that influencer program, the PDF and the course that we're running online now, it's free, it doesn't cost anything. Is just really incredible content. You know, I'm really happy with how that came together. You know, it's straight from the horse's mouth for, you know, arguably one of the more successful brands on social. And so would really urge you to check out the 0 to 100 information. And hopefully I'll see everybody around and we can show you guys the product.
I'll redirect ecommercefastlane.com/grin, so GRIN. It will redirect to the landing page to take Brandon up on this offer to get this fast track demo. Thanks. You know, thanks again for coming on the show today. You know, really, I'm just thinking out loud now, but, you know, Shopify's mission really is to make commerce better for everyone. And to me, just based on this conversation today, it seems very clear that you and the Grin team, that you really are tightly aligned with Shopify, you know, really wanting to help these brands grow and scale. And, you know, thanks again for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve. I really appreciate you having me. And it's been great to chat with you.
This episode was brought to you by ShipBob, one of the fastest growing tech companies in America that's powering the direct-to-consumer revolution. Join over 3,000 e-commerce brands that choose ShipBob as their fulfillment partner and start scaling your business by delivering remarkable customer experiences. You can get more details by heading on over to shipbob.com. Well, that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank you, a loyal listener of E-commerce Fastlane. It's my hope that this podcast is offering you a ton of value through growth strategies, tactics, and exclusive insider tips on the best Shopify apps and marketing platforms, all with my personal goal to help you build, launch, grow, and scale with Shopify. Thanks for investing some time today and listening to the show. I'm so proud and excited that you have a growth mindset and are a constant learner. I truly appreciate you and your entrepreneurial journey. Enjoy the rest of the week and keep thriving with Shopify.